Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where sales leaders teach you what's working for them and how you can build it yourself.
This episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast is brought to you by our sales coaching and consulting services. Are you looking to create repeatable, scalable, and predictable revenue? We've helped thousands of companies grow their business with tailored expert advice backed by testing to ensure they establish the best practices that'll work for them. Head over to bit.ly/predictable revenue coaching to learn more. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast. Whether you're a founder heading up sales solo or you have a big sales team, if you're not using automation in your sales process, you're just never going to scale. I'm your host, Sarah Hicks, and today on the Predictable Revenue Podcast, I'm going to be chatting with an expert about how using sales automation helps you close sales faster. He's the founder, CEO of Time on Target, an Army veteran, an entrepreneur, a sales expert, and a serious technology geek. His expertise is helping businesses take their sales and marketing automation processes to a higher level and integrating digital technology with sales processes in an authentic, professional way. Kevin Snow, welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Sarah. I'm really excited to be here.
So start us off with why automation doesn't do well when people integrate it. Because I think people think about automation, they think they need it. People kind of have that knowledge right now, but often it's just not done well. So tell me about that side of things.
Well, there's a couple parts of it that cause the automation to not be good. One is they don't really take the time to understand who their clients are. So they are passing and serving up the correct content at the right time of the sales process. The other one is that they build something and then they just let it go. And they assume, oh, it's built and it's good to go and we don't have to do anything and we don't have to touch it ever again. And that's not the case. You really have to spend time and you have to do the split testing and you have to be following up and watching and seeing, you know, are things converting? Are things not converting? What's performing? What isn't? And constantly adjusting it and making it better. Mm-hmm. We've all gotten, I guess there's actually three. The third one is the content they send is just rubbish. We've all gotten the automation, the sales automation emails that are, you know, like 10 pages of single typed content, and you're supposed to scroll through the whole thing and read it, or the ones that are just so pitchy that you can't even make it through the first paragraph. And that's the other thing. They send out really bad stuff that doesn't work. So, you know, you got to know who you're sending it to. You got to be sending them the right stuff. And then you got to be paying attention to it and not just, you know, you don't just get to throw it out in the backyard and go play and hope nothing breaks, because that's not how it works.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk through each of those things and kind of how to correct those. So we're starting off knowing our buyer.
Yeah.
And then knowing how automation factors into that. So walk me through that piece of it.
So when we work with clients, the first thing we really do when we're working on a sales process for them is actually figuring out how the buyer makes purchasing decisions and understanding that it's going to be different for each of your clients' ideal avatars, so that you have, all right, so here's how this buyer makes purchases. Here's how this other buyer who buys this other product makes purchases, and being able to map it out. Because one of the big issues we see with companies who have done some work on their selling process, but haven't looked at how their buyers make decisions, is the two never match up. So the seller is always trying to push that buyer to buy faster, and they're getting ahead of the process. And that's where you get the headbutting and where you have the buyer starting to think, wow, this feels like a sleazy sales guy maneuver, and they're not in sync. If you understand the steps and the questions and what your buyer is thinking as they are making their decision, and when they start having those questions, you can start sending them the information when they need it. So now you're this super helpful salesperson that is actually sending them content that's helping them make a decision, making them feel really great about the decision they're making. And it's not content that's just designed to sell, sell, sell and get the close. It's actually designed to help them answer those burning questions and mitigate risk and make them feel excited about the buy, as opposed to just getting the sign on the bottom line.
So how does automation factor into that? How can you automate those those things?
So we do this with a variety of companies. One of my favorite ones is a roofing company. It's a small business. You know, the owner does all the pricing and the bids yet, and then he sends his crews out to do it. And as a business owner, you have a ton of stuff going on. So you need to figure out how you can manage your time more effectively. And sales automation is huge for that. So what we did for him after he did the first meeting with them, where he went out and looked at the roof and or the siding and got all the measurements and figured out what they wanted so he could do the quote, he would go into his CRM and he'd mark the initial meeting complete. And that would trigger an email to that prospect. And it would be, hey, it was great meeting with you on Tuesday, Thursday, whatever. We'd have that all personalized based on the CRM. And, you know, making a choice about a roofer is a huge decision. There's a lot of unscrupulous people out in the marketplace. Here's a checklist of things you should be looking at to make sure you're getting the right person for your house. So we send them that content where it's, oh, sweet, here's stuff I need to be asking to make sure I'm not getting conned out of money. I don't know how it is in Canada, but in the United States, whenever there's a huge storm, we have stormers that show up from like other parts of the country. And they're just there to make quick dollars on roofing. They would knock up your door and all of a sudden you're talking to them. It's like, you're not from here because you have a Georgia accent. What are you doing here? So, and it's just to make quick money. There's usually really horrible maintenance and warranties on it. So, you know, that's a big thing. So having that checklist is a big piece for the buyer to be able to say, all right, I'm checking all the blocks. I'm asking the right questions. I'm getting the right information. I'm not going to get conned. After he comes back and sends them the pricing, that then triggers another content piece that goes out in the email, which is all based on testimonials and case studies. So we have testimonials from people in the same area that have done work with that person that then they get to see, oh, that's just right down the street from me and they did work for them. These guys actually do good stuff. So it's now we get to do that that piece that helps them feel confident in making the decision. So you can do that with really complex sales processes or really simple ones like the roofer has, where you're figuring out, all right, here's the content they need to feel comfortable and move to the next stage. And here's how we're going to trigger it and send it.
Very cool. Yeah, that absolutely makes sense. Those are some really great content ideas as well. Like just for any, doesn't have to be a roofing business, for any business that's listening right now, those types of pieces of content. Yeah. Like that checklist, that value that you're adding value, you're educating whatever, regardless of whether they buy from you, it's true value, that first piece of content. And then you're only starting to kind of tailor it to you after the quote's gone out, after you've kind of built that initial value and trust and all of that stuff. So yeah, even that as your own only takeaway, guys, that is valuable. We can just end the podcast right here.
I did something really similar for my company, and it's a more in-depth in the checklist. I actually did a guide for hiring digital marketing agencies and told them, you know, exactly, hey, here's what to look for. Here's, you know, what they should be able to do for you. Here's how to make sure that, you know, they're doing the work and that's not like some contractor in the Philippines or India, you know, that's getting paid $5 an hour. How do you know you're getting quality work? And we walk them through that whole process of what questions to ask. And it, you know, it's longer. It's like a 15-page little book we're sending out to them. But these people are also paying, you know, anywhere, you know, $2,000-$5,000 a month for services. So we want to make sure that they're comfortable making that decision and they understand, hey, here's how you work with an agency, because it's different than working with a tech firm or a roofing company or a construction company. So it's been really valuable for us because it opens up a ton of conversations that we get to have with that person then about how our business partnership is going to work going forward.
Yeah, great idea. And further along on the kind of type of content that you're going to send out using automation, leveraging automation, it's a very specific order, right? There's like a particular type of content that you want to send at any particular stage of that entire buying journey. So walk me through that and how to get that right.
So there's a general order that you send stuff in. Most content is going to have a specific buyer stage where they're looking for that. So, you know, top of the funnel where they're just trying to figure out that, do we actually have a problem? Is this really a thing? Do we need help? You know, can we fix it inside? They're looking for information about what's going on in their industry. Have other businesses had that type of issue, and what have they done? So case studies are really key at that point, where people are trying to figure out what's just happening and do we need to do something? What's the impact if we don't do anything? As you move further down the funnel, they're going to be looking at more specific information about features and content and what you're able to do and how that benefits them. And then at the bottom of the funnel, you know, we're looking for triggers where they're looking at pricing pages. And they're looking for testimonials. They want reassurance that they're making the right decision. So those checklists come in really handy there. So we actually have, and we'll give your listeners a way to get this later, but we actually have a content map that we use with our clients to show them, all right, here's content you can use at each different stage of the sales and buying process. So you can kind of figure out, all right, what do we want to use and what do we need to build and where are we missing stuff?
Very helpful. And then the last piece that we mentioned on kind of the three things that people often get wrong in terms of automation was just the bad quality content. So if somebody's listening right now and kind of wants to audit their content, maybe it's not them writing it, maybe it is them writing it, but either way, they want to take kind of a step back and see, is this content even worth sending out? What's your kind of recommendation for just auditing the quality of the content that you've got going out?
So when we do content for our clients and for us internally, our focus is always on what is the reader getting out of this. So we always make sure that the content is focused on them and it's providing them some value, some information, something that they need to have so that they can make a decision. Our call to actions at those stages of the funnel are always focused on getting them more information. You know, we'll send them something. Hey, you want to read more about this? Click here and it'll take them to some blogs or an archive we have set up with specific blog posts or some other piece of content that'll help them dig deeper into that content, which then also tells us stuff. Hey, they're having these questions. Let's talk to them about this stuff. We never do, you know, click here to buy in those middle funnels, middle stages of the funnel, where that's always at the end stages. Once we've gotten through it and we're starting to see those buying signs of, hey, they're looking at our pricing page, they're looking at our testimonials, clicking through these different things that are like, all right, so now they're looking for reassurance. But we always make sure it has to be focused on the client. They have to be center in everything we write. And it has to be written around them. So, you know, how is it helping them? What's the end value for them? How is it, you know, what's their life going to be like after they do stuff with us?
Makes sense. Okay, let's talk through the whole sales process. Now we're talking either from, you know, that founder-led sales position or from a sales leader position where we're trying to put automation in, and we'll say there's none. We're literally building this out from scratch. We're adding in automation. Walk me through kind of from when the lead comes in or the contact comes in all the way through how we can leverage automation.
So when we're working with a client and we're trying to go through and say, even if they have an established sales process, there's two things we're looking for to automate off the bat. One is repetitive tasks, and two is communication. So repetitive tasks are huge because if you don't have your digital system set up right, you can end up having to re-enter contact information in multiple systems. And that's a pain. Salespeople complain about that all the time. So we always want to find what, you know, those repetitive tasks, where is data being having to be entered multiple times in multiple systems? You know, where are sales reps having to manually pull reports for the management that can just be automatically generated? You know, where are the things that are administrative that are taking up time, that are keeping the salespeople from doing one extra meeting a day or a couple extra meetings a week because they're sitting in front of their computer hand jamming a sales report? The second thing we look for is communication. So what are your repetitive communications that we can send out? So I know when I did corporate sales, my Friday mornings was always the follow-up email day. where I'd send out the emails. Hey, it was great to meet you this week. I'm really excited to learn more about your business, blah, blah, blah. And it was the template. So I'd cut and paste it into my Outlook. But half the time I would not be paying attention because it's just repetitive and, you know, didn't keep me excited. And I'd forget to change the name. So I'd be sending an email to you that should be saying, hey, Sarah, instead it says, hey, Bill, or I have the company name wrong. And I hit send and then I'm like, oh my God, what did I just do? So things like that, you know, what are the communications that you send to every client that we can automate and send out based on a trigger of something happening in that relationship? And then we start looking after we get those easy things taken care of. Then we start looking at, all right, so what is the key questions that every client's asking at the different stages? How do we develop content around that, that we can send them? And then how do we trigger it so we make sure it gets to the right place? So we really look, you know, at easy stuff that's going to free up time, stuff that's going to get rid of repetitive communications that everyone sends out the same thing. We just need to personalize it. And then we look at, all right, so now how do we actually accelerate the sales process and add in specific content that's going to help the buyer? And then it's building it out. All right, what are our triggers? What's going to cause this to go? Does a salesperson have to complete something? Does it have to be after a specific meeting? You know, what are those triggers that let us know it is the right time to send this content?
Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people, their kind of hesitation around automation is risking losing the kind of authenticity, the human touch, the, you know, the personalized feel that they have. Yep. When they really do one-to-one. So how do you recommend maintaining authenticity with automation?
So that's, if you're a bigger company, you have a marketing team and that's doing some of this for you, your marketing team needs to understand the voice and tone of the person they're writing for. And that's really key. We have one of my clients, and we actually have a podcast together now. He swears like a sailor. He was a Marine, so it makes sense. But so when I do emails for him, I told him once, I love doing writing content for you because I get to swear. I get to drop an F-bomb in business emails. This is awesome. So, but our best email, the one that everyone clicks on and replies to, is the second email in a welcome string for his Facebook group. And the subject is, I'm sorry, I'm an ass. And then it's, hey, sorry, I was so excited to have you in the group. You know, I forgot to introduce myself. Here's some stuff about me. I want to hear this about you. And we get people replying back to him saying, oh, we don't think you're an ass, Donnie. You know, this is awesome. You know, we love it. Blah, blah, you're all good. And they reply. I'm like, did you not see the giant, you know, opt-out block at the bottom that's mandatory that, you know, lets you know it's an automated email? They think it's him because it sounds like him and it's something he would say. So it's really key when you're writing these out, not to get your marketing voice on or to get your corporate sounding voice on, write like you talk. If you normally type and there's a couple grammatical errors or you don't use commas appropriately, do it that way. I have a couple of his followers that just get completely annoyed because we'll not use a comma right in a couple places just because that's how he writes. And we want it to look like it's actually him sending stuff and not me.
Yeah.
Because I write completely different. He is a high D, I'm a high C, you know, total different writing styles. But it has to feel like it's coming from you. So a lot of our emails, we don't even put any of the HTML stuff in. There's no fancy background, not a lot of images. It looks like you were typing it away on your email client. And that is huge. You know, there's ones where you need the HTML and make it fun and cool looking. But other ones, if you're just sending information, you want it to feel like it's you sending it to them. Get rid of all the extra stuff and just have it, hey, Sarah, and then your content and then the signature block like you would do in a normal email and send it away. And that works great. People, I like to think everyone's smart and knows what is an automated email and what's not. But they're not all that smart. Not everyone recognizes that, oh, this is automated. This is, you know, this isn't a real email. This is spam or this is, you know, that type of email. And that's why phishing is so effective yet, because people still think it's real. So,
yeah. Yeah, good point.
Yep. But the key is you got to make it authentic. Make it feel like it's you.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think that's something that salespeople struggle with still. And I think it's one of those things that we like to talk about and we think we know as salespeople, like, okay, I'm not writing from a marketing perspective. I'm writing from a different perspective, but still there's this like want to space out the emails nicely and like demonstrate the knowledge that you have on your industry, your product. And all of a sudden it's like no human being that knows the other person at the end of that email writes to them like that. Like you just go, hey, I'm like talking to you before the podcast. I'm like, oh, hey, Kevin, quick note, like XYZ, chat soon. And then if I were writing you for sales, it would be like, hello, Kevin, I noticed on your LinkedIn that you do this. I am in the sales space also. And yeah, it goes out the window. And maybe it's this funny little thing where there's like a bit of an internal battle where we're like, no, but I'm a professional. And I'm like battling, I've got to be professional and knowledgeable and a thought leader and a trusted advisor. And somehow we think that that doesn't match with just being a human being, but it does.
Yeah. Well, and it's being who you are. And the LinkedIn made me chuckle because if you're doing any type of automation for prospecting, and I don't recommend automating your LinkedIn, they get really grumpy about that. But if you have a team that's doing it, they all have to have different content. They can't all use the same prospecting or follow-up email. I got two messages from two different people 20 minutes apart last week on LinkedIn. They were exactly the same. There was not even a difference in punctuation or spacing. It was all exactly the same. And I looked and like, oh, so one's like a director and one's a sales guy. I'm like, all right, you two should talk. So, but yeah, you got to have it make it sense for each of you and then use your personality. It's like the swearing thing, Donnie. And now it's just fun for us to see what we can get away with for language. But there'll be people who will come up to Donnie. It's like, well, you'd generate a lot more business and revenue if you stopped swearing. We're doing pretty good.
Yeah.
if it doesn't fit for you, that's fine. That just means you're not my person. You're not my target. And that's okay. There's enough people in the world. I don't need everyone to be following me. And that's a big thing with being authentic. The people who like how you are going to follow you and they're going to respond to you. Whereas if you're putting on this whole different air of, I want to feel corporate and like I'm a business and marketing and all these, not being you, people are going to tell and they're not going to be drawn to you the same way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. Or there's nothing to be drawn to. There's no personality in that anyway. So
you're the exact same person as the other 10 people I got emails from.
Yeah, exactly. Amazing. Well, let's talk specifically about why automation helps close deals faster. Talk me through that bit.
All right. So it helps with a couple of things. One, closing deals faster, but then also allowing you to manage more in your pipeline. So as a business owner, it's really cool. You can now have a bigger pipeline. You can close more business because you're managing more deals, which is awesome because now that's more revenue coming in. But it helps close deals faster because a lot of the follow-up that as busy salespeople or busy sales owners doesn't always happen on a timely basis because, oh crap, something's burning, I need to fix it. It gets taken care of. So those emails following up, pushing and driving about the next step in the process gets sent out automatically. The content, you don't have to go search for content to send it to them because we've already figured it out and it's going to get sent out to them. So it accelerates that timing because you're not having to do all the work. And you're focused really now on that face-to-face interaction and getting all the other supporting stuff that helps them move to that next stage gets done. So now it's really up to you as a salesperson or the business owner to be sure that when you're having those meetings, you are setting those solid next steps so that it's not a, hey, when can we meet again? Hey, just following up. You're having everything in place and you're moving forward and then you're sending the right stuff to keep it moving.
Yeah, makes sense. And my final question for you, I always love to ask this of anybody who's kind of come from a different career into sales, which I mean, so many people have, that's a very common path to not go to sales directly. But you particularly being an Army veteran, I always love to hear what you feel the overlap is between your time in the military and now what you apply in business.
So it's funny, I was a late joiner to the military. I had already been in the business world for a good 11 years when I enlisted. So I joined when I was 34. Mm. So I went into the military already having some business, real world experience. I wasn't the fresh-eyed 17-year-old kid out of the Midwest. One of the things I found with the military that I apply into my consulting and working with clients is the process piece. Everything in the military is a process, whether it's how to clean your M4, how to sight in a target, or just how to do operational planning. There's a step-by-step way that you do it. So, and that's really key for what I tell all my businesses is that's really key for scaling. You have to understand how things work and how you do things. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to scale. You know, you're not going to be able to add in 5 extra clients a month because you don't have a process that you can evaluate and keep tweaking and improving on. If it's all willy-nilly every time you do stuff, you're never going to be able to grow. And that's huge for the sales piece. If you get to the point where in a lot of businesses they're growing, it's like, all right, I can't do all the sales. I now need a team. If you have not been working on the sales process and understanding, hey, how do we sell our product effectively? How does our ideal clients make purchasing decisions in our favor? You're never going to be able to train that sales team. I've gone into multiple clients where they have no clue how they sell and they've not done any training for their team. They just assume, hey, well, you were a sales guy at this company and you were their number one rep. You should be able to sell. I was the number one rep at this company because they gave me 2 months of training, paid training, where they flew me to other cities and I was in a group of 40 people getting trained from all across the country. And that's what's key. You got to understand these processes so that you can teach your people how to do it. And then be able to evaluate how they're applying that process. And are they innovating? Are they finding cool things that they've done with it that work that you can now apply to other people to accelerate the success for everyone else? So the process thing is huge for me in the military. And it's funny meeting with clients, especially the ones that are veterans, when I'll start pulling out processes from the military, they're like, this sounds really familiar. I'm like, well, it should, because this is exactly what you did as a, you know, whatever it was in the Army or the Marines. They're like, oh my God, it is. Why didn't I think about it? And a lot of people just, you know, ooh, I'm done with the military. We're going to get rid of all that information. And they don't think it, they don't think it transfers, but it really does. And that's the reason a lot of veterans, when they come out, move into management positions right away because they have that understanding. All right, so how do I manage a team? How do I work with budgets? But then I also understand this process thing to be able to get things done and replicate success.
Yeah, amazing. And it totally makes sense to take some influence from the military because like militaries in general have literally been honing these processes for like thousands of years.
Yeah.
The
process we use for operational planning was taken from Sun Tzu's The Art of War. And that is thousands of years old. And it's the same 4 steps that he taught and that he wrote about that we use in our mission analysis process. And it's amazing. It's like, how did someone thousands of years ago come up with something that was just that works? And there's literally no way to approve upon it. The process wise, you know, the technology we use to accomplish it is always improving and making it easier to do. But the concept and how we do it, it's just amazing that, you know, it's been around that long and it's still the standard for how we do things.
Yeah. Well, it would have to be if you think about those huge armies back, whatever big famous army you want to think about, whether it's like Spartans, Romans, Ottomans, whatever, even like Napoleonic armies, whatever, to be able to somehow communicate across huge, huge groups of people, create strategy that involves huge groups of people, and then execute it. And back then, without technology, yeah, of course, that's the thing you want to try and pull into your business. Yep. Because to have that work across like mountaintops and thousands of people on foot, it works. Like, that's really a perfect map to like scaling a company. Yep. when you're big enough where the CEO is no longer able to like communicate with each person on a daily basis, it is the same concept. So it totally makes sense.
Definitely. And even looking at like the logistics side of battles, everyone automatically thinks when they're looking at a battle and the military stuff, the kinetic function, the force on force, we're going to, you know, go shoot arrows at each other. Or in our case, we go shoot tanks at each other. And they forget about, all right, the supply thing. How do we keep mm-hmm. all those people fed? How do we keep them armed? How, you know, all that stuff. How do we get new people up to the front? And that's a whole nother planning process that happens at the same time, which is key for a lot of businesses on, all right, so how do we supply chain? How do we keep all of our stuff coming in that we need to convert into a product? And then how do we just do distribution? Mm-hmm. It's the same concepts, just with a different application.
Absolutely. Well, honestly, we could do a whole podcast on that alone. So maybe we'll have to put that on the schedule for the next year or something. But
totally,
this was great. If people want to learn more from you, Kevin, if they want to get in touch with you, where can they do that?
So easy way to get in touch with me is just to shoot me an email, kevin.snow@time-on-target.com. Say you heard me on the Predictable Revenue podcast and ask away. But I did mention earlier that I had a gift for your listeners. Yeah. So if they want to get that gift, they can text the word sell smarter to +1-612-429-4298. And I'll send them a list of questions that they can use to help map out their clients' buying process, along with a guide to what content is used for each step in that sales process.
Amazing. And we'll make sure to pop that in the blog too, so that you guys awesome. Can have a look and find it there. Well, thank you so much, Kevin. It was great having you on the show. Amazing to walk through, yeah, how to use automation to save time, close quicker, and all of the things in between. Cool. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed my time. I look forward to getting to come on the show again.
Yeah, me too. And thank you to all of you guys for joining us on another episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast. Please, if you haven't already, hit the subscribe button on YouTube so that you can be notified weekly when we have wonderful guests like Kevin Snow joining us on the podcast. We'll catch you next time.